It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. First launched in 1999, We Touched Down on the Wisconsin Film Festival opens this week in Madison with dozens of films screening through the 20th of this month. Calling about indie films in Wisconsin, your questions and comments about showcasing world cinema, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Ben Reiser is here, Operations Director for the Wisconsin Film Festival. Ben, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. It's lovely to be here.
So, 25th anniversary here. What is your goal for the festival this year?
Well, first, let me say we've been having an internal argument for the last 8 months about what year the festival this is. It's the 25th annual. I think next year is the 25th anniversary.
Okay.
So expect to see a whole bunch of 25th stuff next year as well. We'll just keep riding that out.
You just keep riding it in some shape or form, right? What does this year mean, though? Beyond 25, let's not go there.
This year is special, I want to say, because we got permission last minute to use the abandoned theater at the Hilldale Shopping Center that AMC closed down their operations at the beginning of December 2022. We've been using that venue for the past 10 years, showing films there for 7 days in a row on three of their screens. And so it's really been a major component of the last decade of our festival. And we weren't sure what we were going to be able to do without it this year. And so luckily, we got this last-minute reprieve, and we're invited to use it again this year, but I have a feeling this is our last year.
Yeah, certainly a tension point there. Is it more difficult to find theater space now, considering the demise of movie theaters?
It is, certainly here in Madison. All of the quote-unquote centrally located movie theaters have closed down. If you want to go to a movie in the Madison area, you need to travel to either the west side of town or all the way on the east side of town or into a neighboring suburb like Fitchburg.
So, you know, some festivals, they are run entirely on submissions. Others are these curated festivals where you don't get the requests for submission. How does it work for your festival?
That's a great question. We are a hybrid festival in that our two main programmers, Mike King and Jim Healy, travel around the world and also watch movies at home all year round. They go to other festivals, and the films that they think make the most sense for our Wisconsin audience, they try to bring to our festival. At the same time, I'm in charge of the Wisconsin Zone Programming Committee, and these are the films in this year's festival that come from Wisconsin, from filmmakers who were born and raised here or went to school here, or films that were shot here by a crew that's not Wisconsin related. And so those films do get submitted to us. We get a couple hundred films every year that get sent our way. And then I form a committee with some undergrads here at UW-Madison, as well as a graduate student. And we spend the entire fall watching movies every week and then talking about them and putting piles together of films we think we might want to show and films we think we might not want to show. And then sometime in January, we make some final decisions and start inviting some of those films to the festival.
How does your committee argue amongst itself, but also be productive in the same vein?
Yeah, well, usually I'm there to say, listen, kids, I've been doing this a while, so trust me, this one's going to work and this one's not going to work. But
okay.
No, but it's a lot of fun because these are students who are interested in film and excited for the opportunity. And they're very attentive viewers, and it's great because I love talking about movies, and so it gives us an opportunity on a weekly basis to spend a couple hours talking about some movies, some good, some bad, but always it's always an entertaining and informative session when we meet and talk.
As we're talking about these homegrown films, in 2013, state lawmakers removed a film production tax credit aimed at encouraging filmmaking here in our state. And Governor Evers, his budget has no specific mention of films or movies. Can our state better support the film industry?
Yeah. Yes, for sure. Both production-wise and exhibition-wise. it would be great if our state got behind the idea of got behind again, at least the idea of tax credits for production companies, and you know, also helped fund things like the Wisconsin Film Festival, which is, you know, quite an undertaking. And people hear that we're, you know, part of the University of Madison, so they figure, well, these guys are set, you know, they've got their budget. But it's not true. A lot of our funding every year comes from local business sponsors and community sponsors. You know, not a lot of the money is actually coming from the university, and we sort of have to start from scratch every year and rebuild our coffers based on last year's ticket sales and what we hope to get from sponsors and various grants.
To piece it together, Ben Reiser with us, Festival Operations Director for the Wisconsin Film Festival. You can join in with your questions and experiences, 800-642-1234. And let's bring in Milwaukee filmmaker Chris James Thompson, director of the film We Are Not Ghouls. Chris, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
We're going to dig right in here and explore your doc that follows the experiences of Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Yvonne Bradley, the public defender, the JAG, for a prisoner in Guantanamo Bay. And here's part of the trailer.
We do not torture. We do not render to countries that torture.
The United States has not, is not torturing.
We do not torture. Listen to me.
Well, I'm not going to comment on the last question.
This is so much bigger than just Virginia.
How do you investigate the world's biggest intelligence agency? How could you track what had happened to these prisoners?
Find all the planes that went to Guantanamo.
I'm following the movement of these planes in real time. This is actually the full CIA's fleet.
What a rich montage there, Chris. What inspired you to begin this project?
Oh, I started thinking about this project about 20 years ago. I was in film school in Milwaukee, and I had a classmate and a friend named Abdel. We moved through the program together, and he was an immigrant from Jordan. And one day he didn't come to class, and our teacher told me that he had been detained by Homeland Security, the Department of Homeland Security. And he didn't come back to class the next day, and he was gone for a week. And eventually I tried to go find him at the detention center in downtown Milwaukee, and I got to see him through a big bulletproof glass window, and he had his teeth were all knocked loose and wired shut. And he said he didn't want to talk about his case, that it was a minor immigration issue, paperwork issue, and it would be cleared up. But it didn't get cleared up. He was there for months. And the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security released a statement saying that it was called Operation Magic Carpet, which was offensive to me as a friend of Abdel. And I couldn't help but feel that he wouldn't have been treated that way, held for months and had to drop out of school for a semester. If he was from Norway or Sweden or had a Western name or was white, he wouldn't have been treated in the way he was treated. So that got me thinking about the war on terror and how we are treating people from that part of the country in the reaction to 9/11, the time period after 9/11. So I was reading a lot of books and doing a lot of research, and one of the people that I came across was Yvonne Bradley, Lieutenant Colonel Yvonne Bradley. And she was representing a man held at Guantanamo Bay from 2005 to 2009. And so I was sort of trying to find light in the story, my friend Abdel. I was trying to find an alternative of what do we do right in that period of time. And Yvonne is an example of someone who acted heroically in that period of time. And I think that she deserves to be celebrated. And her story is notable for all of us moving forward in our country.
Ben Reiser, what did this film, what was its impact on you?
Well, every year there's a film that comes our way at some point in the process of watching all the submissions. I'll see a film and think, oh, this is kind of the standard bearer. You know, this is a film that we need to show. And this is the film that all the other films that I watch need to try to rise to this level. And that, you know, that's how we're going to put together a program. So I saw this documentary fairly early on in the process in the fall of 2022. And was just knocked out by it, especially just the charisma of Yvonne Bradley. Chris, I was wondering, you know, at what point in the project did you realize, oh my God, I've got a main subject here, a lead, who is going to be able to hold the screen for 90 minutes and, you know, leave people wanting from more from her?
It's a good question, because that was an important realization for me. When I started this project, it was over 10 years ago, and I was still in my 20s. I found Yvonne's essay in a book that had over 100 essays by lawyers that had been working on these types of cases at Guantanamo Bay and elsewhere around the world. And in my aspirational 20s, I thought I was going to go interview 140 different attorneys and make a feature film out of that. And pretty quickly realized that that was an absurd undertaking and impossible. But luckily, one of the first people that I connected with was Yvonne. And she was so wonderful and trusting. And her story is incredible. Her background is fascinating. She was just the perfect subject for a whole feature film. And so that's what I did, is I just rearranged the project to focus specifically on her.
Yeah, you must have had so much trust, so many interviews. Chris James Thompson, Milwaukee filmmaker, director of We Are Not Ghouls, screening at the Wisconsin Film Festival. Ben Reiser with us, part of the film festival, director of operations. Call him with questions about the slate of films or movie making. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We home in on the Wisconsin Film Festival in its 25th year, depending on how you count, showcasing dozens of movies from cult classics to local creators, and the festival's operations director, Ben Reiser, here on what to expect. And we have Milwaukee filmmaker Chris James Thompson, director of We Are Not Ghouls, screening at the festival. Call in with questions or about making film as well, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Chris, you open your film with former President George W. Bush's list of demands to the Afghanistan government at the start of the war. Why start it there? And how did you figure out where to open with your film?
It took a lot of editing to get this project to where it was to be released. We edited for 9 years while we were working on it. And one of the things we realized was, because this story starts, 2003, 2004, 2005, there's a lot of things that we don't remember about what was happening at that time. And one of the things was, America was very passionate about trying to figure out what happened in 9/11, who caused it, and then what we should do in retribution or in reaction to those events. And there was a lot of fear, and I think it was important to show some of those speeches during the State of the Union events, because it reminded us sort of the passion and energy that we were dealing with at the time, which is standing ovations about reactions, violent in other words, to our perceived enemies around the world and in the Middle East.
And really refreshing our memory of something that has happened decades ago. President Biden withdrew the last American forces from Afghanistan after nearly 20 years of combat. What do you consider the legacy of the war in Afghanistan, especially in considering in light of your film?
Yeah, when I made this film, I almost wanted to move away from focusing so specifically on the broader geopolitical context and think more about one person and how one person can have an impact on these issues. Mm. And Yvonne is that one person. So I like her story because it shows me that anyone in the world, in any position, can find someone that's oppressed and work to try to help them. It takes a lot of work, it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of determination, and it comes at a cost. But Yvonne showed us that it can be successful if you stick to your morals and your ethics, no matter who you are. And so she was one government employee, of hundreds of thousands. And she did a job that not many people would see or know about. But in my opinion, she's a hero. And there's a lot of people like her. So I think we need to spend more time focusing our energy, our money, our movies, our entertainment on people like that, so that our young people can see what a real hero is and who they should aspire to be when they become an adult.
You know, Ben, here we are in the midst of a Milwaukee filmmker. I'm wondering, is Wisconsin filmmaking, is it healthy? Is it a growing industry or shrinking? And what do you see out there among creatives?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think stepping back for a minute and looking a little bit more broadly and historically, I think the advent of high-definition video equipment really changed things for let's say, hobbyist filmmakers, amateur filmmakers, or filmmakers just starting out. Suddenly, people had access to equipment that would produce results that could be shown in movie theaters or on streaming channels in a way that wasn't possible before. You know, before high definition video, if you weren't shooting on 35 millimeter or Super 16, your end product or piece of art is going to look like a soap opera. It's going to look like, you know, it was shot for no money on a studio set or something. And so this new technology really opened the door for filmmakers to be able to create things for not a lot of money that looked like what we think of when we think about movies. And so that's been a huge boon as far as people being able to make things and send things in and get things seen that feel like they are the real deal. Other than that, I'll leave it to Chris to talk about the state of Wisconsin filmmaking.
Well, you know, I'm thinking, Chris, you know, nearly a decade in an editing phase, and just wondering, how did you know your project was truly done? How did you step away and walk away from it and release its energy to film festivals?
projects never feel done. I grew up in Madison, and I fell in love with filmmaking at Madison West High School. My teacher was named Miss Heiser, and she taught us about editing and filmmaking. And one of the things I realized was that you could play films for people and they might enjoy them even when you didn't think they were perfect. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of rough screenings, and we try to get a lot of feedback to see where our film is working, where it's boring, where it's funny, how we can make it more powerful and easy to relate to for the audiences. So it's really a balance of those test screenings with the schedules of the festivals. And eventually, when I run out of money and my wife's about to divorce me, that's when I know it's about time to release the film.
Okay. Filmmaker Chris James Thompson and Ben Reiser with us, Operations Director at the Wisconsin Film Festival. You can join in along the way with your questions at 800-642-1234. You know, speaking of finished pieces, I have this image in my head of Chris, of you and Yvonne on stage in Austin, Texas, receiving a standing ovation at the premiere of We Are Not Ghouls at South by Southwest Film Festival. What was that like about 1 year ago?
Oh, that was awesome. I was just crying like a baby, so it was hard for me to speak, and I basically just handed the microphone to Yvonne to steer the show for the Q&A, and that's kind of how it's been going ever since. We've been touring the country with this film for the last year, and it's been really nice to see her be able to get some attention and to be able to share her story, because her perspective and what she saw and what she went through is so important for us to understand. She was down there when Ron DeSantis was down there in a similar role as a JAG attorney in the military. So she has stories and information and a perspective that is going to be valuable for the rest of her life. So it's very important that we listen to people like her that have seen things and know things that can help us make better decisions in the future.
How has this film changed you as a filmmaker?
I'm a lot poorer, but I think I'm a lot wiser and happier. So that's all that matters to me.
Ben, you know, on that note, are there awards and prizes at this festival?
We do have one award category that we give out every year, and that's the Golden Badger Award. And that's an award that's only available to people in the Wisconsin Zone section of the festival. So Chris's film was eligible and actually received an honorary mention. I almost think that people on the Golden Badger jurors saw this film and thought, well, this is almost too good for us to give an award. We're used to giving awards to, you know, films that are, you know, sort of much less accomplished and, you know, just show like a good filmmaking spirit or something about them. At this one, you know, We Are Not Ghouls feels like, why isn't this already up for an Oscar? You know, don't bother with us. You guys need to move on to bigger, better things.
Chris, how does that make you feel?
It's awesome. Ben has always been so supportive, as well as Mike and Jim and everyone else at the Film Festival at Wisconsin. Being able to come back and play a film in Madison, where I grew up on the campus, the audiences are fantastic. All of the volunteers, everyone that works at the fest, just makes it such a lovely event. And I really hope that people that live there understand how valuable it is filmmakers around the country talk about playing their films there, having come and stayed, and just what a lovely experience it is. So it really is an awesome event.
Chris, thank you for joining us. All the best to you.
Thank you, Kate. Thanks for having me. Thanks, Ben.
Chris James Thompson is a Milwaukee filmmaker, director of We Are Not Ghouls, screening at the Wisconsin Film Festival. Ben Reiser stays with us, operations director for the festival. And there's more conversation ahead with your questions about the Wisconsin Film Festival and the craft of making movies. 800-642-1234 to join in. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we learn about the curated slate of films showing at the 8-Day Wisconsin Film Festival. Starts Thursday in Madison. Call in with questions, your thoughts on film anytime, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ben Reiser is here, the festival's director of operations. We also have Ryland Brixen Cole Tews is a Wisconsin filmmaker and the producer, screenwriter, and cast member of Hundreds of Beavers that will screen at the festival. Ryland, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks so much for having me.
Good morning. Well, we're going to hear just a bit of the opening song to set the scene, because Hundreds of Beavers, you know, following a fur trapper as he battles an army of beavers. Basically, the movie largely has no dialogue. So here's a clip of that opening song.
Son, on the trail, there's a righteous tale. Small man with mountains of pride. He cleaned the dark secrets of Applejack and drinks to the old pot and wine. In each fast in his little house, he'd be thirsty and wandering night. Not men from their camps with their pay in hand and a song in their hearts by and by.
So, Ryland, the mom and me would say, what came over you? Like, what is this about?
Well, essentially, it's a 19th century fur trapping winter epic about this drunken Applejack salesman who has to go from zero to hero and become the land's greatest fur trapper. However, in this world, all of the animals are played by humans in mascot costumes. So it's essentially a live action Looney Tunes movie where my character, Jean Kayak, has to just do battle with these mascots in northern Wisconsin. We shot it over a couple winters up north Wisconsin and the UP and Michigan. It's just a big entertainment picture. Full of action, adventure, comedy, romance. So we just wanted to make a film that was for everybody.
Oh, we've heard it's a nod to Looney Tunes shorts and Benny Hill comedies. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we took a lot of inspiration, too, from, Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin as well. Old Donald Duck cartoons, old Looney Tunes, as you mentioned. So it's kind of it's got a lot of different inspirations going on. But we just wanted to do something that was kind of unlike anything else that's coming out today.
You play this Applejack salesman, intoxicated Jean Kayak, as you said. How did you prepare for this role, especially when it's not a speaking part?
Well, I'm a drunk myself, so it was actually pretty easy. It came pretty naturally, the role. No talking. I mean, that was always kind of a you know, that was an obstacle we had to overcome, you know, but we wanted to take advantage of, you know, the medium of film. And, you know, they call it a movie, not a talkie. So we just wanted to do everything through movement, through action, and tell the story that way, because they, you know, that's what they used to do back in the roaring 20s. You know, they didn't have, you know, any dialogue, and they were able to tell these very moving pictures, these narratives that you knew exactly what was going on. And, you know, anyone, you know, in any part of the world could watch them and know exactly what was happening. So that was a challenge to us as filmmakers, but it was something we really wanted to tackle, because we knew that no one else, whether it be in the film studio world or in the indie world, were going to try to tackle this. So basically we wanted to ring in the 2020s with the roaring 20s, essentially.
Oh, goodness. Ben Reiser, what was the conversation like around the committee table when you screened this one?
Well, I have to say that I had seen Rylan and Mike's previous film, Lake Michigan Monster. We showed that at the festival. Was it 2018, Ryland? I can't remember which year.
I think it was the 2019 festival. Yeah.
2019. Yeah, and so I was a little bit more prepared for Hundreds of Beavers than the rest of the committee, who had not been with me in 2019 and had not seen that one. But basically, we got together to talk about it, and I said, listen, this is it. I don't want to sound like I keep repeating myself, but this was sort of the other standard bearer. So if We Are Not Ghouls was the documentary that needed to, you know, that everything else needed to rise to the level of, Hundreds of Beavers is the madcap, just insane comedy that I judged everything else against. It's just an astounding film, not only because it's so funny, but because of all of the work you can see that got put into it. It just seems like such a labor-intensive process to make a movie like this, with all of the different cinematic elements. I watch their movies and I'm baffled. I have no idea how they did it. It's just extraordinary to me.
Rylan, take us into that creative process. Is it labor intensive? What do you go through?
That's a piece of cake. no, you know, it's a lot of work. Yeah. I mean, you know, but it, you know, essentially what it is when you work within a film medium like we're doing, which again, this movie it's kind of got this 16 millimeter look. It's sort of this black and white, grainy, scratchy look, so it feels, you know, it looks like an old movie too, but if you're willing to work within that medium, you can pull off, you know, a lot of effect shots as well. The director, Mike Cheslick, was also the editor and VFX wizard on the movie, and yeah, he did like 1500 effect shots on this movie. But the nice thing about the black and white, you know, graininess of the movie is you can get away with doing kind of cheap looking effect shots that you wouldn't otherwise be able to do if it was like, you know, a normal looking movie. You know, if the movie looked good, you wouldn't be able to do these sort of effect shots. But if you can make the audience kind of believe in this world within the first couple minutes, and, you know, get them engaged within the first couple of minutes, then you got them. Then you can get away with doing all these effect shots that, you know, really help elevate the movie and create this, you know, otherworldly world, essentially.
Talking with Rylan Brixen-Cole, too, is a Wisconsin filmmaker. Ben Reiser is here, Festival Operations Director for the Wisconsin Film Festival. You as well, join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So, Ryland, you know, you watch your orchard go up in flames, the distillery tanks, they're crumbling thanks to the beavers. Is this at all a cautionary tale in any way in our modern times? Is there a moral?
The moral is beavers are just a horrible animal and they should all be destroyed.
Oh, no.
That's really what you're going to get out of this picture. they're just deforesting our lands at a rapid pace and they should all be put in the ground. You know, it's really more of a documentary than a narrative feature. It's more just like we documented exactly what happened back in that fateful that fateful winter of 1801. So it's you know, it's there's no winners or losers. There's no heroes or villains in this picture. It's just this is what happened. So you know, but I guess being humans as we are, you know, I think you'll probably end up rooting for my character. But you know, these beavers, you know, you can see where they're coming from, you know, so you get a good balancing act of, you know, who's right and who's wrong. You know, we're really asking the big questions here.
There's a bunch of scenes that have you injuring yourself while rigging up beaver traps. Did you get hurt at all in filming? I don't know if to hear the answer to this. I'm asking you with trepidation.
Well, you know, you get some bumps and bruises here and there, but it ain't no thing. You know, you just have one more swig of bourbon and you throw in another, you know, dip of chewing tobacco and boom, you're ready to go again. You know, throw me back in the ring. So, you know, it was a little, there was times where it was, you know, it was a little tough, a little rough out there.
A little touch and go.
A little touch and go, but you know, that's, you know, we all know what we signed up for. So,
well,
you know,
especially when you're on like this micro budget, a shoestring budget, that the shoestring could be eaten by the beavers at any moment. I mean, how do you make the budget work to do what you want to do artistically?
Well, you know, you ask all your good friends to help you. You say, hey guys, we're shooting another movie and that we, you know, we're going to go up in the North Woods and it's going to be a lot of hard work, but look, we can only shoot till 4 p.m. because that's when the sun goes down. So, you know, then we're going to go back to the cabin and we're all going to drink 1,000 beers. And, you know, then we're going to get up the next morning and do it all over again. So essentially it's what we needed is just a lot of, you know, guys on our team who are willing to go through this with us and fight this this cinematic crusade, if you will. So. Yeah, it was a shoestring budget, and there weren't many people on the movie. I think on average we had about 4.7 people on set at any given time, so it was a lot of people doing a lot of different jobs all at once. But again, and again, most of them weren't, you know, film professionals or anything. I mean, we had our great DP, Quinn Hester, Milwaukee native, working on there, and of course we had Mike directing, but, you know, for the most part, you know, these guys, they were just our friends from high school and college and some elementary school who just went up there to help us. So we knew we didn't really necessarily need film professionals. We just needed hardy men to help us accomplish this thing.
Ben Reiser, what comes up for you in terms of this type of get it done and fundraising on the micro budget world scene?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's terrific if you've got a bunch of friends who have a couple bucks they can throw your way, or else put, you know, do some sweat equity to, you know, help you out on the set itself. That's the way you have to do it in the world of indie film. And these guys, two times in a row now, seem to be punching way above their, I don't know what the metaphor is, but they really,
in,
like,
in beaver
see...
world, I don't know if we want to even bring in the weight of the beavers.
right. But I mean, their films look like they cost, I'm sure, a lot more than they actually did. But you really can see all of the work, and not in a bad way. Sometimes films look like, oh my God, this looks like it really took a lot of work, and I'm not sure if the end results were worth it. This one seems like, wow, this looked like it took a lot of work, and oh my gosh, they really knew what they were doing because this is a masterpiece.
Ryland, are you really detail-oriented type A in your life, in your real life?
I'm sorry, say it again?
Do you find yourself, I mean, to pull off a film like this, you have to be really detail-oriented, and I wonder if that type carries through to the rest of your life.
Oh, no, normally we're just all slobs. I mean, we're just absolute wrecks in our normal day-to-day life. But for some reason, when we get together to make a movie, we're very detail-oriented, yes. I mean, Mike Cheslick, I mean, again, there was no script for this film, and he had to board out every single shot. So we were in the, you know, when we were in the woods, you know, he had like three binders full of just storyboards that he had drawn. So, That, and then you know, we would shoot during the day, and he'd get the footage and bring it back into the timeline for editing that night. So he was very precise with everything. And yeah, I mean, you know, when you have no one really working on your movie, or, you know, very limited amount of people, you have to be very precise, and all the coordinating and everything has to be done very, you know, it has to be laser guided, essentially. So yeah, there's a lot of precision that goes into this. And again, Mike, especially when it comes to the editing part too, he's just, he's like a savant. I mean, he's just, he's so meticulous. So it's, yeah, it's a lot of planning, but, that's the only way it could have been made. I mean, or all the, otherwise we would have just kind of been running up, you know, in the Northwoods kind of blind with a camera and not really knowing what the hell we were doing. So a lot of planning, but, you know, that's what it takes, you know, with four people on set.
Ryland Brixen Coltu is a Wisconsin filmmaker and producer, screenwriter, cast member of Hundreds of Beavers, screening at the Wisconsin Film Festival. Ben Reiser here, who is talking about lifting up Wisconsin homegrown filmmaking as director of operations at the festival. Colin, with your questions, your comments about this film festival and making movies in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore an annual film festival set to get underway in Madison, the Wisconsin Film Festival. Call in with questions, 800-642-1234. Ben Reiser is here, operations director of the festival. And Ryland Brixen Coltu is a Wisconsin filmmaker with multiple credits on the black and white Hundreds of Beavers screening at the festival. So, Ben Reiser, when you hear a cast and crew putting forth this film, Hundreds of Beavers, into the universe with 4.7 people, I mean, are there advantages and disadvantages for productions on these movies that have a small crew?
Keeps everyone focused on the task at hand, and it also probably leads to less arguments on set about how to do certain things. I mean, if you got less people there, you got less people to convince that your way is the right way. But Ryland, am I saying that right? Does that seem to track for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, it's just everyone's got this one certain, you know, goal in mind, obviously. But yeah, I think just having so few people and it being, in our case, being so cold outside, and only having so much time in the day, literally, to film before the sun goes down for, you know, most of our shoots. It was just kind of like, look, Mike has a plan. The director, Mike Cheslick, he has a plan. He knows exactly in his mind what he needs. And everyone just went along with it and said, all right, that's what we need. And sometimes, you know, it was hard because sometimes a lot of these shots in the movie are composited between, you know, four, five, six other shots to make a single shot. So there might be times where we were picking up certain things that, you know, so we were shooting certain elements for certain shots that we were kind of like, what are we doing again? Why are we here? What is this for? But we just said, all right, Mike knows. I mean, he's the editor, he's the director. He must know we need this. Let's just, you know, let's go along with it and shoot it. And we did. And then, you know, he puts it in the edit and you say, oh, that's why we got that. So, yeah, there was never a time wherever anyone was, there was never sort of any interpersonal battling going on between crew members because you just don't got time for that.
Ben, is there an appetite for this type of film on the festival circuit?
There sure is here in Wisconsin. Hundreds of Beavers we put into our largest venue, the 1,100-seat Shannon Hall on the UW campus. And tickets have been flying off the shelves for this. I'm super excited. There's going to be hundreds of people watching Hundreds of Beavers, and it's going to be a great time.
Ryland, what does it feel like for you when you hear something like that? I mean, I would imagine it's not all beavers in the audience. Taking this in.
Well, yeah, we're very appreciative of Ben and of the Wisconsin Film Festival to not only take our very silly film, but to to showcase it in front of so many people in such a large hall. We're really looking forward to it. We're going to have probably about, you know, at least 10 members of Team Beaver there with boots on the ground there to you know, do Q&As and stuff and just to entertain the folks there during our screening. But it means a lot to us, you know, to have such a great turnout. I know we've shown at a couple other festivals so far in Wisconsin, and we're going to be at the Milwaukee Film Fest at the end of the month. And it's really nice to, you know, after doing all these other film fests around the country and around the world as well, it's really nice to come back home and to have such a warm reception and so many people wanting to come see the movie. Because again, you know, we're from Wisconsin, we shot it in Wisconsin, so we're really looking forward to having everyone in Madison come out and have a great time.
Ben, Wisconsin has other film festivals, as you are well aware, Milwaukee, Green Bay. How is the Wisconsin Film Festival different from the others?
Well, first of all, we're just better than all the others. I would say that, I think our festival is unique in that we have the split focus not only on the best of current cinema from around the world, but also the best of current cinema from right here in Wisconsin. But also we have a very deep roster of restorations and rediscoveries. Most of the people who work at the Wisconsin Film Festival also work at UW Cinematheque throughout the year on the UW-Madison campus. In that program, we show films drawn from the entire history of cinema. We show them for free all year round at our home base of 4070 Vilas Hall. But we carry that mission into the festival with us. And so the new films at the festival are sort of in conversation with a bunch of films from throughout film history. So we're showing films from the 30s and 40s. We're even showing other silent films. So Ryland's silent film, Hundreds of Beavers, is sort of in conversation with the cameraman and the lady and some other silent films from the 20s that we're showing with live piano accompaniment. So I think that makes our festival unique, that conversation.
I love that. And Ryland, we're almost out of time here, but what happens after Beavers? What's next?
Well, that's highly confidential. I couldn't possibly share that on air what we're our next film, but we do have we got scripts, we got ideas. We're definitely not taking our foot off the gas. We're definitely gonna start right in on our third feature here pretty soon. But in the meantime, yeah, we're just gonna keep doing festivals, and then we're gonna do a theatrical run in the fall for Beavers, and then hopefully by late fall, early winter, it'll be available to rent and stream and available to purchase on Blu-ray and all that good stuff. But, you know, while we're still doing all this stuff with Beavers, we're not going to rest on our laurels. And, you know, just because we love the act of filmmaking. You know? So we just got to go do the next thing. You know, that's all you can do.
Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Thanks so much, Kate. Thank you, Ben.
Ben Reiser, Operations Director, Wisconsin Film Festival, Ryland Brixen Cole Twos behind Hundreds of Beavers. Earlier, we talked with Milwaukee filmmaker Chris James Thompson. Wisconsin Film Festival, business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.